This is Dr. Ed Wozniak from the Texas Department of Health Services.
First of all, I fully agree with the educational sheets that go with the little turtles or with and frozen rodents. I mean, that's really, I look at that as almost like a meat product. So putting a label on there, you know, wash your hands after handling, like we do with other meat products, it would be a good idea. I don't want to see sources of such things banned on the basis of salmonella. Because first of all, rodents really, although they can become infected with salmonella, they're really not that great of carriers of it. If you look in the rodent pathology textbook, rodents readily succumb to salmonella. You know, they develop an enteritis, they oftentimes become septicemic, and they die. So they're not real good carriers. So the rodents that are going to be loaded with those organisms are probably going to look pretty sickly. They're going to have staining on the fur. They're not going to look very appealing as a food item. But what really strikes me is when I look at the numbers here of cases, we had 77 cases of rodent-derived salmonella in 2010, where the total salmonella on the average is 42,000 cases per year. That 77 cases is really pretty minuscule compared to the 42,000. And a lot of this 42,000 comes from meat products, from poultry, from ground beef products and other things, which we must assume has salmonella and has to be handled accordingly. You wash your hands after you're done with it. You avoid cross-contamination. And that's really, the way I see it, probably all the more we need to control these low numbers of salmonella cases attributable to reptile handling or reptile food products like the frozen rodents.
Do you have numbers on how many samples of chicken you get at the grocery store have salmonella? I remember back in high school it was some astronomically high number, like maybe close to 50%.
I don't know, but it's high. I mean, you should assume that it's there. And with ground beef, you know, if there's salmonella, the ground beef is not recalled. There's salmonella performance standard. So some of it is going to have it. We know that.
Those reports are published annually on this chicken, turkey.
Yeah, there's some groups funded, some of the states, to go out and do retail food sampling. I could try to look it up online, but there should be something online. I don't know how recent it is. I know there one recently came out, and the Campylobacter count was really high. I can't remember the salmonella.
Yeah, Campylobacter is very high in chicken, especially.
One thing I want to emphasize, there may have been 77 reported cases, but far more cases go unreported than are ever reported. I don't know what the factor number is, but it's very, very high.
Well, yeah.
16 and 29, depending on if it's a big outbreak that's in the news or more people are likely to hear about it versus not in the news.
And you can make the same case for the 42,000.
Exactly.
That's the number reported. So, I mean, in reality, it's probably a lot higher than that. Especially the cases that aren't very severe. If people get a little bit of nausea and diarrhea, and it goes away.
They just think it was the Mexican food from the night before or something.
Well, anyway, that's all the point I wanted to make. I didn't want to see something done to prevent people from having access to these things simply on this.
Well, this is going to sound bad, but you know what? You can't stay there because you're in an overcrowded population. Natural occurrence will occur whenever anything is overpopulated, including humans. These things are going to become more rampant, and they're not. You know, you can use the word salmonella. We can plug something else in there. It doesn't matter if it's HIV, whatever it is. As a society or as any type of structure becomes overcrowded from rodents to people, there is going to be something else in its place. And you're you're not going to save everybody. Sounds bad, but that's true.
The key to all this is simple sanitation. Wash your hands if you handle it. I mean, that would go a long ways.
Is there then any discussion or any further discussion on limiting the forage regulation to aquatics so that the market for tortoises can develop?
I don't know. Does somebody else want to?
Yeah. That's probably a question that will be best left for the big question and answer period after Elliot's. Yeah, but there has been some discussion, but not that much, and nothing formal came of it at this point.
Sir, some states like Tennessee have recently said and enforced that turtle possession is legal because of salmonella. Native turtles, captive bred, non-native turtles. Are you saying that this is wrong and people should have access to turtles because they have utility?
Yeah, I think they can be kept safely with a little bit of common sense and some instruction on how to safely keep them and handle them.
I think the majority of the persons that get sick and have fire in the Hispanic community in the market, it's a lot of the ones that have, they go to the flea market and they don't clean, they don't have the water's not clean, they don't clean anything. And then little kids, and they, I mean, any little kid, with the exception of my daughter, she never put anything in her mouth, but they put it in their mouth, and that's the first thing that,
oh, yeah.
You know, you have to thank all the little kids, you know,
I mean, they would prevent a whole lot more cases if they banned poultry and eggs.
This goes back to the whole salmonella pathogen deal, but like, what's the pH buffer zone that they can actually, that they actually have to survive in? You know, the pH, the pathogen can survive in, you know, successfully and still, you know, progress without, you know, any behavior.
I'm not sure on that. Does somebody else have an answer?
Well, I'm saying, like the actual rodent itself, exposing it to a higher pH or a lower pH for an extended period of time to kill that pathogen off, maybe some sort of like non-septic solution or some sort of, you know, something that wouldn't interfere with any, you know, set, you know, receptors or anything. So,
part of the problem with that could be adaptability of the organism as well. It seems to be very adaptable. Every year we find it in some other medium that we didn't think salmonella could grow in. You know, it could grow in peanut butter, grows great in peanut butter, tomatoes are fairly acidic, and it grows great in salsa. So whether it's adapting to different environments or whether just different serotypes have different limits, I'm not sure. I haven't worked on that, but I know it seems to have a wide range of things in your pH in which it can survive, including freezing, which fascinates me.
I was going to make one other comment. I work in zoonosis control, and really for reptile-associated zoonosis, this is really about all there is.
Yeah, I mean, that's really bizarre.
The salmonella. So compared to other types of animals, there's really not much of a hazard in terms of zoonosis. Mammals are much worse.
All right. Now, we'll return to the salmonella for the question and answer period. Dr. Jacobson is going to discuss some of the other pathogens and issues that we've got with diseases with reptiles.